This is MMATorch.com editor Wade Keller with the first Keller MMA Torch audio update, or something like that. I don't have a name for it yet. But it's my first foray into a solo podcast here at MMATorch.com. I want to talk a little bit about UFC 77, a little bit about Brock Lesnar, and a little bit about some of the discussions going on in the MMA Torch forum. Let's begin with just a few thoughts on the two big matches at UFC 77. First of all, Anderson Silva and Rich Franklin. I sense that I was looking forward to this fight more than most people were, and I'm not sure why. I guess maybe a lot of people have been talking about Anderson Silva not speaking English, and maybe that keeps him from being as much of a favorite for UFC fans, casual and hardcore, as he would be otherwise. I don't know if I buy that, because there's been a number of guys who aren't great at English who have been in much more anticipated fights than this one. And I thought this deserved a lot more anticipation. Not that it wasn't anticipated at all. It definitely was treated as a worthy pay-per-view main event. But I just know among people, maybe it was the undercard was a little weak. Maybe Tim Sylvia just drives down people's interest in a UFC event, because they know, as he proved once again, you're probably going to get a couple boring rounds at least out of it. But I was very excited about this fight. I just was really curious to see what the deal was with Rich Franklin last time. He's looked good since then. I just could not believe the look on his face heading into his first fight against Anderson Silva. I mean, I compared it, and I didn't mean to be too ghoulish or gruesome about it, but it reminded me of the look Saddam Hussein had on his face as he was walking the plank. I mean, it really looked like he was walking in for slaughter. It just, there was something very eerie about the look in his eye. I mean, it seemed like somebody from the mob went up to him and said, "You will lose this fight decisively, quickly, or else." It just had that kind of, he looked defeated before he stepped into the octagon. He did not have that look this time. He looked much more confident. Not overconfident, but a lot more confident. And he came out there, and I thought put in a really good effort. I mean, he lost, but I don't think he lost in a way where people are saying he's washed up. I think he lost in a way where people said, Anderson Silva is that good. And then there's a drop-off, and then there's Franklin, and then there's another drop-off, and then there's the rest. Although, Dan Henderson's probably right in that mix. Over at SureDog, they've got a poll up asking who the who has the best chance against Silva, and Henderson has over 50% of the votes, and out of 10 different people, you know, give or take, who are listed, and I do not disagree with that. I mean, I just don't know at this point who you look at and you say, yeah, this is the obvious top contender other than Henderson, and I don't think there's any shame in Henderson's last fight in the way that went. Henderson is at 53%. Matt Lindland is at 12% in second place. I just don't see, and that fight probably won't happen. Robbie Lawler probably won't happen. I mean, Frank Shamrock probably won't happen. There's just not a lot of top-flight options right there. In our MMATorch.com poll, we asked who's the most dominant fighter in their division, and right now, Anderson Silva in first place, 77%, ahead of second place Randy Couture, Rampage Jackson third, and then Tim Sylvia and Sean Sherk, each at 3%, with Matt Serra, 0%. Poor Matt, no respect. He'll either earn it or prove his critics wrong coming up in December. But anyway, Silva just looked fantastic. I think the most memorable moment for me of UFC this year was the Krokop knockout. But I think number two right now, number two's got to be Rampage knocking out Liddell. I'm going to keep coming up with them. But probably number three right now, and to me the coolest, was Anderson Silva's Matrix movie-like special effects avoidance of a barrage of swings by Franklin. I was just in awe of what he did. I mean, I just compare what Silva did out there to Wayne Gretzky at his peak in the early 80s, where it looked like, you know, Gretzky knew where all the players were going to be and the puck were going to be before they even got there. And it's like Silva knew what Franklin was going to throw at him even before he threw it, and was avoiding a punch even before Franklin thought of throwing it, much less got around to throwing it. It was just an amazing spot near the end, and very good. And I also think that is a fight that you show to MMA critics, and I'm glad that we have to talk about MMA critics a lot less. I mean, 10 years ago, when in Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter, when we mixed our MMA and pro wrestling coverage in the same publication, I was, you know, I remember spending hours on the phone with mainstream journalists from various newspapers, a woman with the Detroit News when they were trying to get, I think it was Detroit, Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Detroit. There was a big article there, and she was just like, you know, this just seems so barbaric, and you had the whole thing with John McCain, which I editorialized left and right. And it just got so frustrating. And I'm glad that we're kind of seem to be past that now to a great degree. There's still some dinosaurs out there. But for the dinosaurs out there who still think some for some reason MMA isn't a sport and it's right there with Michael Vick in terms of, you know, sadistic competition, this is a fight to show them. Because while you didn't have great ground fighting, you had some. So it wasn't a complete stand-up fight where a boxing guy is going to go, ah, that's not... You know, that's not the sweet sign. Those guys are inferior boxers, and a boxer would take them down because it showed ground fighting as a factor, and you got to be able to defend yourself and get up. But what I like, and obviously you had a decisive knockout. You had incredible, incredible athleticism by Silva. But what was really great is that after the fact, you had Silva and Franklin shaking hands and hugging and showing respect. And, you know, Franklin took a beating, but he was on his feet. He admitted he didn't really remember a lot about the fight, wanted to go back and talk to his coaches, find out what happened, his trainers find out what happened, but it showed that there is a great respect. You can throw punches at somebody to knock them out and be hugging them a minute and a half later. And you know, Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan were saying that during the post fight analysis, and I agree. It's one of those fights that epitomizes the sportsmanship of MMA. But back to Franklin, I just don't think it's. I don't think this is the end of Franklin, but we've had a discussion going on the MMAtorch.com message board and the forum and trying to figure out what's next for Franklin. Would he change try to change divisions, move up or down? Would he work in the light heavyweight division, or would he be undersized and be not a factor? Or does he stay in the middleweight division and just try to go for a third match against Silva a year from now and go through two or three top-level opponents? Until then, I mean, I think Franklin, if he's the gatekeeper for title shots, and you have to go through him to get to Silva, and he beats everybody who comes at him, I mean, eventually you have to give him another match. I don't imagine things being different, but if Franklin has a year to train and decides, you know, I'm going to have to try this tactic or that tactic, just try a different approach, try to take it to the ground instead. not that he's going to be better than Silva on the ground, but, you know, two fights in a row showing he's not better than him standing up. I don't know, it's real discouraging. I mean, It's how, you know, I think the Utah Jazz felt for years, fans felt for years, not to throw too many sports analogies out here, but I think it's how they felt for years when the Bulls dominated. I mean, Malone and Stockton were this great team, and they got to the finals and were always top playoff contenders, but the Bulls just kept them from winning the finals. Maybe Cleveland early on, same thing. So it just seems like that might be the point that he's at, where he just happens to be the second best guy in the division. I think a Franklin Henderson fight would be real interesting. I don't almost, you know, do you give Henderson a title match right after losing in an upper division? I don't know, and I don't know what the latest is on that. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that match. I thought it was just short of 4 stars, only because Silva was never in trouble, and I just think to get into the 4-star minus range. In the star rating system, just from a, you know, do you have to pay, should you go out of your way to see this fight? You should, but I don't think if you're listing it in fight of the year category, I don't know that it's in that category. And I think anything that you rate 4 stars, you're basically saying it's shorthand for this is a fight of the year contender. I don't think it reached that stage because Silva was never in trouble. But it was 3 stars plus. It was right on the verge of that because it was just such a dominant performance by Silva, but dominant in a way where Franklin was still really competitive. Good crowd reaction too for Franklin. It made for an exciting fight. They liked Rich, but it was hard not to like Anderson. And the fact that Franklin put him over afterwards with some nice comments was good. Tim the Maniac Sylvie against Brandon Vera. I mean, this is now we're back to the pre-Pride buyout heavyweight division before Randy Couture returned, and you're just kind of going, man, you know, let's get Nogueira in there. Let's get something that feels like it really is a top level fight with top level fighters. Sylvia is just one of those guys where he has this great record, but he doesn't, you know, and everybody knows this, he doesn't win in exciting fashion. And is he smart or dumb? Well, it's a tough call. If you start losing your fights because you start trying to be exciting, then you're done. If you keep winning in a bad division and they don't have any other heavyweight fighters, they at least Dana White can point to your record and say, well, you know, he keeps winning fights, it might not be exciting, I'm not going to build a pay-per-view around him ever, or not for now, but on the undercard with a lesser payoff, but at least he's on the card getting a semi-main event payoff, he deserves it. He's kind of the gatekeeper to the title right now because he's a guy who's been around more than anybody now that Couture's probably gone. And so now you've got, Sylvia beating Vera. Vera afterwards thinking, he didn't get his ass kicked. Rogan asked him if, once he got his ass kicked, if he'd move divisions, because it's clear from commentary Rogan wanted him to switch divisions. And Vera said no. He asked the crowd if he thought he got his ass kicked, and they said no, sort of. And so he said no, he's going to stick around. So I think there's, Rogan made it clear he wants to see how Vera would do in light heavyweight. I think it would be an interesting move for him to make, but that would constitute him apparently having to watch what he eats and train harder to cut weight, and he doesn't want to do that. So, but I don't know. He might be talked into it by other outside forces. But now we've got Sylvia and another winner in a fight that was boring for the first half, got better in the second half and showed some, there were some highlight reel moments for Sylvia in this fight, but that's not saying much, because to make a highlight reel with Sylvia, you have to go through a lot of fights and splice out just little glimpses here and there, little clips here and there. But there was enough in there to keep it above a one-star match, which is just one of those don't-even-bother-to-watch matches. But it wasn't even close to 3 stars. And the fans are going to give Sylvia a hard time, deservedly so, until he's exciting. UFC is a sport people pay, not because they're interested in the future of mankind. They want to be entertained. And granted, they want the sport to have integrity, but they want their fighters to not just sit on the ball and not try to play. And he just seems like he's running out the clock in these fights and making sure he doesn't get hurt. And there does come a point where it's like, it's the worst fight ever in the history of MMA on a large scale was Ken Shamrock and Dan Severn. I mean, that was just horrible when they just circled each other in one fight. And Sylvia just, he's not that far from that some of the time, and you can blame both of them for it, but they both were trying to protect themselves and not lose. I just think there comes a point where you want to see somebody fight to try to win, and Sylvia just doesn't seem to be doing that enough. Stefan Bonner looked all right, but it was a blah fight, definitely disappointing. People expect out of him just a balls-out fight, and that did not happen. But he won, and that is important because that helps him move to the next level. In our other poll right now that we have going on, because I want to shift to Brock Lesnar real quick here before I wrap up. Who should Brock Lesnar's first fight be against? Kind of, I don't know if it's surprising or not, but Tim Sylvia is winning the voting here. 29% out of 421 votes right now voting for Sylvia. Might be name recognition, it might be because people don't like him and they think Brock can beat him, and there's probably something to that. I mean, it also, you had Brock cutting a promo on Sylvia, basically calling him out and saying that it's what everybody says, but he basically mocked him. I think it was Vera who said he had twig legs, but Lesnar had something to that effect several weeks back that he said about him. That'd be a good fight because it would prove if Lesnar's for real if he beats Sylvia, and if Lesnar lost, it would be a learning experience, but Sylvia is a high enough up guy that people would look and go, oh, Lesnar is nothing. He's a complete washout. If you want to go with a high-profile fight right out of the gate for Lesnar, I think that's the safest bet because you don't lose. Even if Lesnar loses, then Lesnar comes back against Heath Herring or Frank Mir or Brandon Vera or somebody like that who he's got a better chance against. And if he wins, you can justify putting him in a heavyweight title situation right away, although a lot of this depends on what they end up doing with the heavyweight title if things don't get worked out with Randy. The number two choice is Mirko Krokop, which surprises me. People want to see Lesnar against him in his first fight because, although it's the same situation with Sylvia, maybe more so, is if Lesnar loses, no harm done. Heck, it's Krokop. But if Lesnar wins, my God, he's totally for real at that point. The problem is, do you want Krokop to lose again? But if that's the last fight Krokop has in UFC, maybe you want to give Lesnar a chance to make a legend out of him and basically send him into retirement so that Lesnar has that as on his record to make him seem legit. Again, it's a no-lose situation for UFC. Even if Lesnar got knocked out with one punch, Lesnar's the type of guy, marketing-wise, because of his years in WWE, he's got charisma and he can talk. He can say, hey, I learned a hard lesson. I know what it's like now. And I can take a punch, but Krokop's one of the best punchers out there, and I got to learn from it. I mean, he can talk his way into rebuilding, and then you just move him down, and again, he takes on somebody else. So It's going to be interesting what they do with him and where they go with him. I've got my analysis of his interview up on MMAtorch.com right now. He talked to UFC and talked about his road through from WWE to the NFL and now to MMA. Some good quotes from Brock, and I've got some analysis there and background on his attitude in WWE and his move then to the NFL and how it went. Because I'm from Minnesota, and so I was immersed in that. So I played preseason football and was plugged into all the media coverage he got. So I commented on that. And then also why his, and then kind of why he moved to MMA. So some good quotes in there. We're checking out that article if you haven't yet. Anyway, that's it. Not a comprehensive look at the pay-per-view, but I wanted to hit on some of the high points from Saturday night's event with some of the bigger names, and also talk about the Lesnar stuff a little bit, and whatever else, and the poll results. So that is it for me for today. I'll be back, who knows when, with another solo MMA Torch Keller audio update, or whatever I end up calling them. Stay tuned for what I assume will be a round table with some combination of Sean or Jerry or Mike later on this week with an in-depth comprehensive conversation on UFC 77. Thanks for visiting MMAtorch.com. Please spread the word and please join us on the MMA Torch forum in our discussion area. Interact with the staff. They love to hear from you, and so do I. So if you haven't been there or haven't been there lately, go check it out and join in the discussion. A lot to sink our teeth into and talk about going on in the MMA world right now, with also some pretty interesting fights coming up, and also, of course, the Ultimate Fighter series, always a conversation piece.